Hi there, everyone, and welcome to the 25th episode of the Bumblecast. I'm your host, Ian Flynn, the Bumble King, and joining me all, as always, is...
the equally talented, esteemed compatriot, my majordomo, international man of mystery,
my co-pilot,
my Padawan learner, the New Year's baby, the Bumble Quizmaster. New Year's baby, Kyle Krause.
I'm the New Year's baby again?
The Bumble Quizmaster, my Bumble co-host, the musical maestro himself, that remix master DJ, the last son of Krypton, the holder of the Triforce of Awesome, my co-pilot.
Again?
My billionaire philanthropist playboy buddy, my pit crew chief, the Tails to my Sonic, the Orbot and Cubot to my Dr. Eggman, that freshest squid on the block. I choose you, Kyle!
Kyle!
The man who Nintendo does what I Nintendo don't. This is a $6 million man.
Me!
That's right, your number one Bumble co-host, Kyle Krause.
Hi, Ian.
If I ever call you co-pilot again, slap me. I've overused that one, apparently.
Oh, well, whatever. It might be true. Maybe it's true. I don't know. Is it true?
So, that I've overused it or that you're the co-pilot?
That I'm the co-pilot.
Yes, you're the co-pilot.
It might be the most fitting one yet.
So that's 25 episodes. How in the world did we make it this far, Kyle?
We are unwilling to give up in the face of everything.
No, it's because of our patrons, Kyle. Our patrons!
Oh, yeah, that's right. Those, yeah. That's correct. Yes, that's actually true. Thank you very much, patrons. We love you.
So... We're not fools. We've seen the statistics, and like 90% of the people on YouTube jump to the Q&A. So, to give the people what they want, this episode is going to be nothing but Q&A.
That's right. All Q&A all the time.
And we're throwing out some of our normal benchmarks out the window. We're going to have lots of priority Q&A, more than just the normal three. We got tons of stuff from the queue. I mean, this is stuff still from the Bumble King forum days, right?
A lot of it is, yes, indeed.
So, we're going to be catching up on a lot, but as always, if you want to get your question answered sooner, hop on over to patreon.com/bumblecast, toss a dollar or two our way, get into the priority Q&A, and boom, there you go.
And don't forget also that we have a winner for the Bumble raffle that we announced
episode. Our very first Bumble raffle winner. And that winner is...
Mike B!
Congratulations, Mike B! We will get in contact with you to find out where we should be sending you that signed copy of a Sonic the Hedgehog or a Mega Man issue. It'll be a surprise.
I like surprises. Surprises are fun.
Now, if you are totally jealous of Mike B, and you should... this is how you can enter the Bumble raffle. Either A, be a patron on Patreon, in which case you are already automatically entered into every single raffle, or B, email us at bumblecast@yahoo.com for each episode that you want to be entered into. So since this is episode 25 and you want to get a shot at episode 26, write in and say Bumblecast episode 26. Don't be smart trying to go 26, 27 every episode to the end of time. It's per episode for there, bucko.
Yep, whichever one you email in between, we will put you in for the next one. So don't try and trick me. I'm paying attention here, I swear.
And if you want to join the conga line of questions, either email us at bumblecast@yahoo.com, tweet to us, Ian Flynn BKC or Kyle JCRB, #bumblecast, or ask a question on the Patreon page.
All right, are you ready to get into some massive Q&A action?
Let's get going.
All right. First up, we got a question from none other than a loyal patron, Fancyful. What is your response to the criticisms regarding Shattered World being the adaptation for Unleashed and the way you handled its elements, such as Chip and the Werehog, and the way you utilize Cream the Rabbit since Shattered World, or ever since her debut in the comics, as well as any other notable criticisms you want to respond to?
Well, let's first put those two key things side by side. The criticisms of Cream are one or two people being very loud online. That's not a major criticism. Major criticism I would qualify as something I've seen in the written mail. I've gotten an actual email to myself, stuff that's been emailed to Archie, stuff that I've seen online in general. And that would be larger discussions like how Unleashed was approached. That I would say falls under that purview. Crim, not so much.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the criticisms, too, I have to take with... I guess I got to take it on the chin, because we have to do what Sega says. And I can't go into detail over what limitations or what was denied. What limitations they put on us and what was denied, he said, using actual English. They have very specific visions for characters like Cream that we have to abide by. We were actually very limited in our usage of Chip. And stuff like the Werehog. I know a lot of folks were, some folks, were unhappy that Sonic lost control as the Werehog briefly.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the game, he never loses control. It's his pure spirit that keeps him who he is, despite being infected with the Dark Gaia energy. But there are a number of other people who were never satisfied with that, because what was the point of turning Werehog at all if it wasn't part of the character? It doesn't do anything for him. It just turns him shaggy, and it's a different playstyle. There's no actual change. So they liked the fact that his character actually had to do something, that it was his pure spirit winning out in the end, that they saw some kind of advancement, some kind of struggle for a character who really can't be challenged because Sonic can never lose.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of that back and forth, it kind of evens out in the end. Some people are going to like it, some people aren't. That's the business. I can understand folks not being happy that Unleashed was not a pure adaptation, but that was never our attempt. That was never our approach. It was used as a framing device for the new universe. And in retrospect, maybe if I had to do it all over again, I might take a different approach. But hindsight's 20/20, and there were a ton of contributing factors to how we approached the new continuity the way we did. Some of it was out of my control as well. So in the end, Sonic Unleashed is about Sonic traveling the world and stopping Dark Gaia. When you boil it down.
Yeah.
And we used that element to look at different cultures and different regions, and we touched upon a lot of the nuancey stuff. I mean, I dredged up stuff from the Wii and PS2 version of Sonic Unleashed, for pity's sake. So I think what we have works well for what it is, and folks who are not satisfied with it, I'm truly sorry. I hope you'll enjoy what we've got going forward. And those who did enjoy it, I'm so glad you did. In summation, I don't think the criticism or feedback on the Shadow World Saga has been any different from anything else during my 10 years. It's been a little bit of good, a little bit of bad, a little bit of obsessive, a little bit of people not even remembering the game. So it's a mixed bag, and it was generally positive.
And there's no way you're going to ever please everybody all the time.
No, I try.
It's impossible. Yeah, I mean, we all try, absolutely. But it's impossible. Next question here from Zephyr Flame. Gian was once with the Egg Army, but has since turned traitor. However, she kept her cybernetics. Now that Conquering Storm knows about the failsafe and the failsafe the good doctor had installed in them all, why doesn't she just activate the failsafe in Gian to keep her from being a problem?
Can't answer that one.
Spoilers.
Just keep reading. keep reading.
It would help if I could read it.
Sooner than you think.
Uh-oh.
Just keep reading.
Uh-oh. All right, from Daniel L., we got a question about the games. I heard a theory slash rumor that there's going to be a third Sonic in the new game, which would be the Sonic 2017. If true, who would you prefer, Adventure-era Sonic or Boom Sonic?
Okay, first off, and I want you all to pay very close attention to this, I don't know. Okay?
Okay.
This is not me being coy. This is not me hinting at anything. I have no insider knowledge as of this recording as to what's going on with Sonic 2017. I might know later when we do an adaptation, which I'm sure we will, but as of this recording, I don't know. I have no influence, and anything I say here should be taken as purely conjecture. Okay? If I see this answer float around out of context, I am going to be miffed. Nettled. So, my answer would be, I would prefer to see Boom Sonic. Because, to me, Adventure Era and Modern Sonic aren't different enough to really be considered different Sonics.
I would agree.
I know that there's a lot of nuance that you can argue about, but I think Adventure Era onward is pretty clearly Modern Sonic, and Classic is Classic.
Yep.
If they were going to do something like add a third Sonic to the mix, it needs to be something truly distinct, and that would be Boom Sonic.
I would like to see Spinball Sonic with his janky jump with his janky jumping and really crappy controls. Let's do that again. And his really slow speed, because he's really freaking slow. I'd be down with that.
Yeah, he was.
I love Spinball, actually. I'm one of those weird people, I guess. I quite enjoy Spinball a lot. Bad controls and all. I'm 100% in on that.
I was absolutely awful at the game. I could barely get past the sewer. No further.
Oh, man. The game is incredibly difficult. I could never get past the machine. The third level. It is just way too... I don't know if it's an issue with the controls or if I'm just bad at video games. It might be both. I'm probably going to go with both on that one, but still, I still love Spinball. So, bring back Spinball Sonic, dang it. Alright, we got a question from Connell T. A Mega Man X question.
Ooh!
The Robot Masters weren't too hard to show their personalities as characters, but I imagine the Mavericks of Mega Man X would have been trickier to write into the overarching stories. How would you, as a writer, possibly integrate them into the plot other than the boss battles that they had?
I would say if we were able to take the approach that I would want, that the Mavericks would be far, far easier than the Robot Masters. A lot of the Robot Masters, especially very early on, didn't have a ton of personality. It was stuff that I cultivated from the hard-to-find Japanese stuff and, you know, just trying to read into the how they moved in a boss battle and invent from there.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it's been added retroactively, but there was a lot of gray area with them. Most of the Mavericks, however, have a lot more. They have a job. They have a defined personality. In a lot of cases, they have voice clips to work off of. And what I would really love to do if we were able to do this with a Mega Man X book is really set up how everything falls apart. That's where I was kind of trying to go when we were doing Mega Man and showing those glimpses into X's world to show the utopia before Sigma's rise to power. And all these Mavericks who were functioning Reploids beforehand, I would love to show them interacting with other people, what their original jobs were, how they were integrated into society, so that when they go Maverick, it is a truly tragic thing, and you can understand why X is so hesitant to pull the trigger.
Mm-hmm.
This is, of course, assuming that I would get the page and the issue time that I wanted, but ideally, I would like to show where they were and how the society was working and how it would fell apart over the course of the games. That's a big if, but no, that's how I want it to go.
That sounds pretty similar to the games, just fleshing it out a lot more, which is would have been really nice. All right, from Michael B., our raffle winner.
Yay!
Woohoo! Could there be a limited run of plushies based on the Freedom Fighters, or are they just not as marketable because of how niche the comics are?
I think it's partially the niche, although I would imagine in this day and age, with all the online stores, it would be a little easier to push.
Mm.
But I think there's some kind of rights issue. It's something to have to do with how Archie can't touch the licensed properties for merchandise, I think. I think it would be up to Sega to do Freedom Fighter stuff, and I don't think they're interested in it.
That's a shame, because I'd buy a Nicole plushie.
Mm-hmm. What I would love to do is somehow get my hands on the 3D models that Raffinite has done for the series. Plug those into a 3D printer and just make a whole series of little figurines.
Little figures, yes. Little amiibo.
Yeah!
Some Sonic comic amiibo. I'd buy him.
That'd be great.
That'd be awesome. Oh, well. And finally, for the final Patreon priority question, comes from Samuel P. If, hopefully when, Marvel or DC were to hire you, which character from either company would you most like to write for, and what would your pitch be?
Let's see. I got to be a little careful with this one, because I actually did write a comic for DC.
Yes.
I don't know how much I can talk about it. Suffice to say, it got editorial approved. I did receive payment for it, but the book it was going to go into was canceled before the script could be used, which is unfortunate, because I had a lot of fun with it. I'm really not sure how much I can say in terms of who it involved or where it would have been, but I have dipped my toe in the pool of DC. So, I don't know. There are certainly characters that I would prefer to write more than others, some that I feel like I've got a better idea on. But for both Marvel and DC, I would kind of like the challenge of any of them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because part of what was so much fun when I started on the Sonic book was taking all the various ideas that didn't mesh and make them into a cohesive whole. And the legacy books of Marvel and DC are kind of known for having all those multiple billion tangents out there, hundreds of different writers having their different interpretations. So pretty much anyone you threw at me would be that kind of same game of, all right, here's all this stuff. How do you make it fit together? So I would pretty much take anybody you threw at me.
Awesome. No, you don't have any preference whatsoever? Is there a character you would want to write for? Like a character you're just like, nah, that's okay, I don't want to touch that one.
Well, I grew up on X-Men, so I'd love to get into the X-Men.
Okay.
Batman, because everyone wants to write Batman, I know that. I'd like to dabble in the Green Lantern universe if I could.
There's a lot of
Maybe try to hand it in humans, because it feels like there's a lot of potential and possibility to go nuts with that one. I actually had a pitch for the Prowler on Marvel's side that's sitting on my hard drive. I just don't have any way to push it right now.
That would be cool. And that does it for the priority Q&A. Let's get into some standard Q&A, shall we? It's a Q&A blowout. All right, we got one here from Esoteric GM. Just wondering how much the sales of trade collection support creators versus single issues. Is there info on that anywhere?
I'm sure there's some resource out there somewhere, but a lot of the sales figures are behind closed doors.
Yes, indeed.
Or they're incomplete.
Yeah.
Like the Diamond Distribution sales charts that go out are only for direct market. That's your brick and mortar comic stores.
Yeah.
And the Archie books traditionally sell better off of the news racks and your drug stores, your little kiosks in the mall, that kind of thing. So they could be doing very well, it's just it isn't represented in the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of single issues versus trades, I don't know. It would probably depend on who's doing the publishing and distribution of those books. And it depends on the contract that the creator signed. Case in point, since I know what I'm doing, my contract is simply I send them a script, I get a check. So any reprint stuff, any trades, any second printings, I don't see any money from that just because that's the way the contract is. So it doesn't help me at all. But creator-owned stuff would probably be where creators get the most money off of reprints and stuff.
Right, yep.
But it really varies from publisher to creator to project. There's no single answer for that one.
Yeah, that's really difficult to nail down. Digital sales are like a complete mystery almost, it seems like.
Right.
There's really no data on those at all, which is a shame because I'm sure digital comics are selling really well. Comixology is obviously still around, so...
There was also an interesting infographic I saw recently that pointed out it really depends on how you count the numbers or how you look at them that changes the whole picture. Because it was the results for July, I think, where Marvel and DC, of course, had over 50% of the market, but Archie had become the third highest publisher with, I think, like 1% of sales or something. But when you actually broke it down in terms of number of titles being printed and amount of copies being sold, because Archie is putting out so fewer titles compared to the other two, they were actually selling more books overall than the other two. It's just the other two had more titles that were being sold. So it's really funny how you look at the numbers, and I, being a failure at math, can't really fully understand, but, you know, it's like, it's a complicated question. It's for someone who actually knows what they're talking about. That ain't me.
Yeah. Yep, indeed. All right, next question is from Heartbeat Sergeant. Now that Julie Sue is gone, what do you think of Julie Sue Cross Knuckles and Rouge Cross Knuckles, since Sega ships it?
Honestly, I wouldn't even say Rouge / Knuckles is kind of a Sega thing anymore. But
Not really, no.
They're more rivals now than anything else. The only time that they really were kind of shipped was SA2 and Sonic X, and that seems to have been dropped, at least as far as I've seen so far. If it were up to me, I would have kept it Knuckles, Julie, Sue. Mm-hmm. Teased the Rouge angle a little bit just for drama's sake, but I was happy with the two echidnas together.
I miss Julie Sue a lot, actually. I really liked her.
She had a fun design. Yes. Props to Patrick Spaziante for that.
Yep, she was one of those classic characters I was kind of sad to see go, for sure. S. Chevelle wants to know, what's your opinion on seemingly never-ending stories or continuities for certain franchises? Do you believe that all stories should end, or can any story be open-ended so long as there are dedicated fans? I.e. Star Wars, anything in the Marvel Universe, and yes, even Sonic.
I'm fine with it. It comes with the problem of your sliding timescales and perpetual continuity.
Yeah.
Where you eventually run into a moment where you have to retcon or reboot or something to keep it fresh. But I like the idea of the never-ending stories, the perpetual fables that you can enjoy and pass down to your kids and say, you know, 30 years ago, this is what was going on. Look at where the characters come, or see how things have repeated themselves, or this little nugget from the past has become retooled into something new. It's almost like an oral tradition of sorts where each writer gets to pick up the story and put their own spin on it. Obviously, it's more complicated than that, but I'm trying to be optimistic here. At the same time, I really enjoy stories that have a goal, a focus. I worry with my own stuff that if I don't have an end goal, that it will just start to meander. And eventually you want to wrap up your own stuff so that you can move on and do something new or actually have a point to everything you're telling. So they're both different forms of storytelling. Neither one is better than the other. It's just you have to make sure that you do a good job of telling that story.
Yeah. I like open worlds where you can explore your characters who are doing different things sort of either concurrently or before or after the initial story. I always kind of like that sort of idea of a world being much larger than just a set group of characters in one story. So,
right.
I think that kind of thing is really cool. Next question is from Lord Laharl's Vassal. What were your original plans for the Shadowfall arc that included Mephiles and Black Doom? What was different from what we got?
Oh, it's been so long. And I wouldn't say that they were like hard and fast plans. It was the initial pitch that got rejected. We retooled it. It's not like we lost a lot. I think it involved Mephiles using time travel shenanigans to resurrect Black Doom, and they both had a revenge scheme. Ultimately, I think the end result was about the same. Black Doom getting blown up, Mephiles taking on a more organic form to kind of put his super ridiculous powers in check, and becoming a reoccurring villain for Shadow. So, since we couldn't do that, we did the Black Arms with Eclipse, and I think we got a stronger story out of it entirely, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
The primary reason I initially would have gone with Mephiles and Black Doom was just for the game recognizability, and because inventing new alien characters felt like it was already starting to tread into the deep end of OC territory And when our hand was forced and we had to go into that and create Eclipse, there was a lot. We've covered this before, but there was a lot of effort put into making Eclipse not an original do not steal type of thing, to actually make him a character that fit in the universe and not be something regrettable.
Yeah.
And I think we succeeded, because folks have really responded well to Eclipse.
Eclipse is cool. I'm definitely right there with him. He's a great character. So that's awesome. Next question is from Quantum Edge. Is Mighty a pacifist, or will he ever become a pacifist, or will his pacifism ever be referenced?
Mighty prefers not to fight where he can. He's a very gentle spirit. He's got a very strong adventurous streak right up there with Sonic, but he's not quite as eager to dive into battle as Sonic would be.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, he's not going to hesitate to take action when being heroic would be the right thing to do. Now, in the stories we've seen him, he's always been there to help someone or to fight the greater evil because someone needs help.
Yeah.
He's normally live and let live. He'd be kind of hands off, okay. But when he needs to go in, it's not going to be like X from Mega Man X going, I don't know if I can fight. It's like, no. He's going to go in. He's going to his hands dirty. But it's not like he's going to relish it or seek out violence.
Sweet. DaBig RG has a question. I recall you mentioning that the blue Chaos Emerald was originally going to fall into the ocean, but Worlds Collide changed that. Was this meant to cause something along the lines of the Meropas arc?
Oh, man. I think so. I mean, the whole point of putting it in the ocean was to put people in the ocean so that they can meet the Fishmobians.
Yeah.
Beyond that, I don't remember, because a lot's changed since Worlds Collide.
Yeah. Yes, the world, the Sonic world uncollided, and Mega Man's world is, somewhere?
Over the rainbow, blue bots fly.
Aranos1 has a question. Were there always going to be four dark arms? Is there any chance for more of them? Any rejected ones?
Yeah, I wanted to keep it to a limited number. The original idea I had was they were more like the, well, what were they called? The Black Soldiers' Black Arms, I believe. The general enemies that you fought in Shadow's game. And each one was going to have a unique power, and they were going to be more or less mindless grunts under Eclipse's hive mind. And I was talking with Aaliyah about it, and she goes, why have them be, you know, standard mooks? Why don't you make them like Wisps, where they actually contribute to Eclipse's power set and his character rather than just being bodies to hit? I'm like, oh, yeah, that is better. Okay.
Yeah.
Boop, boop, boop. We went through a few of the powers. I did a few concept designs, which, no, I'm not going to show anyone because they're awful because I can't draw. Looking at what different power sets there were and what would be interesting in terms of what could Eclipse use, what would be a nice variety of powers. And we whittled it down to the ones that we have. There's a few that I would like to touch upon at some point, maybe. But the whole point of the Dark Arms was that they were specially engineered by Eclipse, so he had a limited sample size, and not all of them survived the crash landing on Sonic's world. So we're probably not going to see any new ones for a long time, if we see any at all.
Alrighty. VEDJF wants to know, can it be assumed that the Chunnan Freedom Fighters represent each of the four clans that Dulcie mentioned?
Yes.
Dun dun dun. Yarkaz Zero, was Sonic ever given a formal apology from Gunn for wrongfully imprisoning him?
I don't know if there's a canon answer for that. I would imagine that he did receive some kind of presidential pardon from the president of the United Federation, since he seems to be a rather stand-up guy. I don't know if Gunn would have ever stepped forward specifically, because that doesn't seem like their kind of characterization. Gunn seems like the kind of folks that come in, mess things up, and then kind of just shuffle out of frame and let the politicians and the PR folks handle the rest. Because I would have liked to have been a fly on the wall for the meeting between the president and Commander Tower after the whole truck driving through the city.
Nice, yes.
Commander, do you want to explain to me why you drove a semi down the street destroyed 17 separate parked vehicles. Sir, it was a hedgehog, sir. And also, Commander, why does it have rocket engines and buzzsaws? Seemed like a good idea at the time, sir.
They spent too much time playing Pepsi Man. The next question is from SpyroZap. How many animal species will be introduced in the Sonic comics later on? I assume as many as you can put in there. That's my addition to that question, by the way, that second
part. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to go too crazy with it, because when we introduce new characters, I do want to kind of play with the number of species we see, because there's tons of hedgehogs and cats. And
yeah.
Within the fandom, there's more. You can throw a rock and hit a fox. It's out there. So I try to vary it up a bit. But at the same time, I don't want to overburden the extended universe with, you know, here is a character just for the sake of having a binturong, you know? So I have a set number. It's not like it's a goal I'm out to achieve. It's just whatever the story needs. We're probably not going to see too many new characters over the next few years just because we've done a ton of the world building already. It's time to play with what we have.
Yeah.
There will be some new ones just to fill a few niches and to tell a few stories, but overall, we're moving forward with what we have.
And there are a ton of characters, so if you can't find one you like, I don't know what to tell you. At least one.
Just assume it's somewhere out there in the world.
Yeah. Crocpedo asks, what are your favorite ongoing comic titles that you're currently reading?
I'm sad to say I haven't read a comic in a while, like sat down and dedicated read anything.
Mm-hmm.
One, because I don't have the time to do it. And two, I think we've covered this on a previous show, I find it hard to read and enjoy comics because I know the process too much. Like, I'm dissecting it panel by panel. I'm like, oh, okay, this is obviously where the editor stepped in. Or, I don't know if I understand the pacing of this. I would have done it this way. Or, I wonder what the whole arc is going towards. Like, is this something that's going to be set up for a later theme? And it's like, by the time I finish reading, it's not really that I've retained anything. It's just I've overanalyzed it, and I hate that. Movie, I can sit down and go, oh, that was a fun movie. Cartoon, sit through that. Yay, that was a fun cartoon. Game, oh, that was a fun game to play. Comic, I'm writing a dissertation with every bloody issue, so.
Oh, no. Yeah, that's always one of the worst things about getting into creating something professionally is you're dissecting everybody else's work on it.
Now, there are three webcomics that I, you know, put off for like a month and then binge read.
Mm-hmm.
And those are comics, so those count.
Yeah,
so,
sure, absolutely.
Google up Gunner Craig Court, which is a fascinating science fantasy series. It's really fun going back to the first pages and seeing how much the artist's skill has grown over time. They're truly phenomenal at this point. Order of the Stick, which is a very D&D-based stick figure adventure,
mm-hmm.
is not afraid to shatter the fourth wall for a joke, and is incredibly intricate with its subplots and overarching storylines. And Under the Canopy, which is a fantasy series that involves a lot of elemental-themed characters. It also has a huge breadth to its world. And the level of imagination and the character designs alone is jaw-dropping. So I would recommend any of those. Fire up Google, look those up, catch up, do some reading.
Yeah, the only ongoing comics I'm reading right now are Sonic. So I guess that's by default has to be my favorite. I'm a little bit behind. I want to get into some other comics, but I've just been, yeah, you know how it goes. Life gets in the way sometimes. So
yep,
life and other media that I'm consuming. So TV, games, all that stuff. All right, next question comes from Alan AJ Jeffers 1. What kind of plans did you have but weren't able to implement in the Worlds Unite crossover?
I guess I had... Okay, so my original thinking with Worlds Unite was because Eggman and Wily were the big bad's last crossover, and we were getting X into the mix with Unite, I wanted the villains to be Sigma and the Deadly Six as the forerunners to be the new villains, so to speak, and Wile and Eggman being more of a background element. But things got shuffled around, revised and whatnot, and the Deadly Six became more of fodder than really characters in the story, which I guess is a little disappointing.
Yeah.
But overall, the goal was to have all these different franchises come together, and that's exactly what we got. I'm glad we did manage to squirrel away a few issues to have specifically just fun little interactions between various characters that you wouldn't think would ever interact.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing truly in depth, but with that big of a cast, you know, there's only so much space. I'm glad we got what we did.
Yeah. There was just something that really made me happy personally about Alex Kidd and Sonic meeting. I don't know what it was. Mm-hmm. It was just like, I don't know. It was just kind of adorable, I suppose. There's just something about it. The old mascot meets the new one. It was nice.
There's one thing that going back, because when we did Worlds Collide, folks asked, where are the Freedom Fighters? Mm-hmm. Where are the Freedom Fighters? Why are they not showing up in this big crossover? And it's because, you know, we wanted to focus on the game cast because that's what most people would recognize.
Right.
And we would be getting a lot of casual readers coming into it just for the pure novelty because they know who Mega Man is. They know who Sonic is. Let them get into it for what they know. So I made a concentrated effort of including the Freedom Fighters in the second crossover because mm-hmm. of fan demand. And to make it match up with Mega Man so it wasn't just, you know, here's the Sonic cast and Mega Man. I included the Robot Masters so that there would be, you know, equal terms, both franchises being equally represented.
Mm-hmm.
But that right there makes the cast almost too big to manage. And then when we had the Maverick Hunters come in with X and Zero and Axel, and then we had Styx and everyone from Boom, and then we had the other franchises, I realize now that that's too much. If I were to go back and do it again, I would have to just not include the Freedom Fighters or all the Light Robot Masters, because I'm sorry to the fans, but it was a disservice to the story overall, I guess.
It seemed kind of unwieldy. I think you managed to pull through, but it was definitely a, like, man, there are a lot of characters in this. It's definitely one of those, so. But I still had fun reading it, so I'm gonna say it was a win. Next question is from Anime Cowboy. I know you're a fan of J. Michael Straczynski and sci-fi. Do you have any thoughts on Babylon 5?
You know, I never watched Babylon 5. We were a Star Trek house growing up, mm-hmm. and to my young self, Babylon 5 was the knockoff. And why would you dare sully your eyes with it? We had Deep Space Nine.
Deep Space Nine is really good, though.
I know. I need to get back to it at some point, but I never actually saw any Babylon 5, so I have no opinion on it other than I have no opinion on it.
Yeah, I don't know much about it either, other than it's written by J. Michael Straczynski. That's all I know.
I know it's got a huge following. I know the fans absolutely adore it, so there's got to be something good there. I just need to find the time to sit down and watch it at some point.
Yep. Next question comes from Armin Haas 510. Or 510, I won't be presumptuous in how you pronounce that number. Is there ever going to be an arc about the Southern Seas or a more detailed arc about Chunnan?
I do want to get more into Maropus and follow up on Dulce's group. The end.
Spoiler alert. Non-spoiler alert.
I mean, I can't really say what I've dedicated to just yet because of spoilers, but, you know, that's what I want to do in the long run.
Yes. WHS Muggs asks, does Wendy Noggins actually have a crush on Eggman? Where did this idea come from?
Yes, she does, and it comes from the fact that it's hilarious.
Yes, that is the best part of it. It is hilarious.
There's no greater thinking to it.
That's it.
Because you've got Eggman and Walter, who are very bitter enemies.
Mm-hmm.
So the inverse of that is to have Walter, the only family Walter has, actually be smitten with Eggman, and that's just funny.
Yes, it's hilarious. It's great. I loved that whole arc. It was awesome. It's hilarious. @CyborgHector wants to know, what hobbies do the Egg Bosses have?
I feel like we touched upon this in another episode.
Did we?
Or something along those lines.
Maybe? I don't remember it, actually.
No, just, let's cover this off the top of our heads here. Let's see. Start with Clove. I imagine she's a reader. She likes her quiet downtime. Thunderbolt, she doesn't have hobbies. She works. She works all the time because she wants to please Dr. Eggman. That is all she lives for. Work, work, work. I mean, maybe she gets enjoyment out of bossing people around, if you want to count that.
That's always fun.
I imagine Hood likes to write poetry. It's really bad. Like, it's cringe-inducing bad. But nobody can tell him otherwise because he won't take it well. I imagine Nefeth liked to weave early on. She just liked creating patterns and rugs and other garments just because it was fun to get into the rhythm and create something like that. But she really hasn't had time ever since she took over the Egg Army. Axel, he likes working in the shop. He likes building things. He likes fine-tuning the various vehicles. His job is his hobby. He loves it. It's going to be stereotypical, but I guess Conquering Storms enjoys calligraphy. She's like Thunderbolt. She's devoted to her craft and her profession. She's a perfectionist, I guess, but not in the hilariously aloof way Thunderbolt is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Connie actually knows what she's doing.
Yeah.
Ma enjoys music. Thinking symphonic, mostly. He likes conducting, he likes composing. Nothing really serious. He doesn't think himself any kind of grand maestro, but he has an ear for music and he appreciates it because music is timeless. Tundra, he doesn't have hobbies. Hobbies are a distraction. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Don't be weak. Don't be stupid. Ocklet likes to hunt. Easy enough.
Yeah.
And Abyss, again, her job is her hobby. She likes to steal things. She enjoys sailing. She enjoys raiding. Being a pirate is what she's all about, and Eggman makes it easier for her, so she's happy about that.
Nice.
No, and then there's the Battle Lord. Kaku the 50th.
Okay. How could I forget?
He enjoys tactical games. Board games, strategic games, chess, that sort of thing. And he's actually pretty good at it. He's surprisingly adept. He likes to err on the side of a good offense makes a good defense and crush your enemies, but he's actually pretty good at beating somebody at their own game type of thing.
Nice.
Oh, and Wendy, she just got added to the roster. She collects porcelain figurines. The creepy, super saccharine little kitties or children with those big eyes, and you see them in the dollar store, and you're like, who buys these things?
Yeah.
She doesn't. She's got some hidden room, some cave, that's just got thousands of these staring, creepy, milky white porcelain figurines. And she adores them unironically. She thinks they're cute.
Awesome. All right, from Illiger BR7. What kind of books would you recommend to an aspiring writer in regards to character and world building? Any particular authors?
Peter David's on writing comics, or comic book writing. I can't remember the exact title. But I really like the way Peter David explains his process and his thinking on how to approach characters and story construction. And Scott McCloud's Understanding Comics approaches it from an outsider's perspective, which I think is almost required, because when you get so deep into your own passion, you kind of lose that perspective. And his book is explaining comics to the non-comic reader. And I think that's a very valuable way of looking at how it's constructed, so that you have that way of looking at it and you're not just going, oh, this is the way comics are made, so this is how I'm going to make them. You can see why they work and why they don't work and are able to adjust your own way from there.
Nice. Any other ones or just those two?
Those are the two that I've read and retained the most out of, I think.
Awesome. I might have to look into those myself, actually, just for fun. All right. This next question comes from a great name, Tromponed.
Yes!
I don't know. That's just an excellent name to me. I don't know. I like it a lot. Would you ever want to go back and retell the stories of past Sonic games in the new continuity?
Oh, absolutely. My dream is that we would get like a direct-to-trade spin-off series where we just go back through and tell the game stories and how they fit into the continuity. Or a second ongoing, you know, sister book to Sonic Universe where we just do that.
Mm-hmm.
That would be amazing.
That could that be something that Mega Drive maybe morphs into if it continues on down the line?
I don't want to say yes because then people are going to go, "Oh, he confirmed that it's going to be a
no." Obviously, but yeah, I think you know what I mean.
The more support Mega Drive gets, the more that it tells the upper management of Archie that you want more Sonic books. So it's never a bad thing,
right?
I don't think we're going to get a second spinoff, but you know, I didn't think we would get Mega Drive or Universe. So who the heck knows?
Yeah. All right. Next question. We're whittling these down. We're getting close to the end here. This next question is from Yaldabaoth 17. I'm going to go with that. Do you have a successor planned for this Sonic comic should you retire?
Sorry. No, that's not how it works.
Obviously.
I know I've been at this for a long time, but that does not put me in any kind of authority to dictate who shall be the next Sonic scribe to taketh upon the labor. No, it's if something were to happen to me, I get hit by a truck or the editor suddenly doesn't like me and I'm gone, it's up to the editor who writes next. I have no influence on that whatsoever. Now, those who have written alongside me, you know, so far, Aaliyah Baker, Tracy Yardley, Evan Stanley, I would be perfectly comfortable with any of them picking up the torch if they got it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't get to choose that. I do not have nearly the amount of influence and control people seem to think I do.
But Ian, don't you control everything? Aren't you the editor and the writer and the distributor and the everything? The merchandiser, the marketing person, everything? You do everything, right?
No.
Oh.
No. Oh. Although some days I wish I was.
Oh.
The one and only Sonic God controlling the franchise from on high. No, I don't want that stress. I do not want that stress at all. I am perfectly happy right here.
Yes, I'm sure the Sonic the Hedgehog Twitter gets enough of that as it is, and they are nowhere near any of that. They're social media. That's pretty much it. All right, speaking of social media, we got one from Red Hammer here. What's your opinion on dank Sonic memes? What's your opinion on having them in the Archie Sonic comics?
In terms of the Sonic Twitter, I think they're hilarious.
Yeah.
And I think it was Tyson Hess who put it best. I'm going to paraphrase what he said because I can't remember exactly what he tweeted. But whether you find them funny or not, it's getting attention. It's bringing focus back on the franchise. And it's in this kind of self-effacing, self-aware way that makes you remember it fondly.
Yeah.
You know, Sonic was built on the whole 90s attitude sort of thing. So I think that the tone that the Twitter and Tumblr and Facebook persona has right now is the perfect evolution of that.
Yeah, it's really good, actually.
I think part of what Sonic's trouble was in the 2000s was dealing with this dated form of the icon because the 90s counterculture thing died out.
Right.
And when that is the basis of your character, what do? And I think it's kind of morphed into this, again, self-aware, ironic, tongue-in-cheek humor that fits the character, retains that kind of snarkiness and individuality while not feeling dated.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of what I put in the book, I try to put in a few jokes here and there so that the kids today who use them interwebs will get the joke.
Those dang kids!
And I put in some that are for the older readers. She'll go, "Ah, I remember that one."
Yep.
And it's been long enough that I can actually get a chuckle at it instead of rolling my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but that's humor for you.
Yeah. I love it. I think it's great. Anything that gets more attention on Sonic, I think, is helpful, even if it's silly. And even if it makes people remember, "Oh man, Sonic 06. Why'd you do that?"
I mean, that's a perfect example, because when they did the retrospective.
Yeah, oh, that was great.
Anniversary party. And just a now loading sign.
Yep.
Brilliant.
Yes.
Absolutely brilliant.
It was, yes, that was genius. Oh, man, that was great. And they didn't even mention that the Sonic Boom was a game, I think, in the little write-up. I think they just said it was a TV show, which was even more hilarious. Next one comes from Unknown Shadows 675. What are your thoughts on winter, the season? That's also, like, the one other exception. I don't know what that means. But
I'm not sure I follow that last bit either, but winter is my second favorite season, first being autumn.
Mm-hmm.
I love autumn because of the smells, because of the colors. There's this energizing feel in the air. I always feel like I'm my most creative and productive in the autumn. Winter, I love the snow. It's just when it gets too cold to enjoy it that, you know, don't like it so much.
Yeah.
Spring, I enjoy because it's like the warmer version of autumn. The warm being the detracting factor. I like my cool and my dark, but, you know, it's warming up. There's fun breezes, but then things start to bloom and I stop breathing. And summer can, it can go away. Thank you. The day star, the sky tyrant, can ascend and go right back below the Earth's crust. Ra can hurry that ship across the way, thank you very much. Bring back the painted splendor that is fall.
Now where I live, Ian, where I live, fall and spring do not exist. I have lived, where I've lived is Southern California and Central Arizona. Yeah, there is almost no spring. If there is, it lasts like 2 weeks. And then all of a sudden, it's 100 plus out for blazing temperatures for the next 6 months. Then after that, fall happens. It lasts, again, for about maybe 2 weeks. And then it is all of a sudden in probably the equivalent of your fall up there in Toronto, where it's in the 50s and 60s. And sometimes occasionally rainy, but not very often. And that's pretty much what it is. So, personally, my favorite season is winter because it's actually nice out. You can go outside. You may have to put on a little bit of a jacket. You may have to wear pants if you want to. I mean, you can probably wear shorts if you're into that. But it's not like there's no snow. There's no leaves falling. Nothing really changes much. It's just all of a sudden in the 50s and 60s instead of the 110s. So that's pretty much it. So winter is definitely where it's at for me.
See, I would enjoy the extended autumn type of weather, but in summertime I would need something like Mr. Freeze's suit out of Batman just to exist. A temper-controlled full astronaut suit where I'm at a comfortable 60 degrees.
Yeah.
Fogging up the helmet every time I breathe and looking at the rest of you on the outside. No. Can't do it.
You see, while the rest of the world has been outside playing Pokemon Go, there's been nothing like that going on here. I'm sure there's some, like, the malls and stuff where it's actually air-conditioned and you can go indoors. All that kind of stuff has been... There's been people in there, but if parks and stuff, they're still desolate. Nobody wants to go outside when it's 110. Nobody. So yeah, that's kind of how I feel with seasons. Winter or fall and spring barely exists. And the last question here is from Jenny May 42. What is the mascot thingy for the show? An alligator? And what was the inspiration behind it?
That is actually covered on the FAQ at BumbleKing.com, but since we're doing the show, that is the Bumble King. That is the product of a young Ian Flynn who was bored during AP Environmental Science. And we were going to take this field trip down to the Okefenokee Swamp, so we had this big packet of stuff we were going to cover. And on the front of it was this photorealistic alligator printed. And as I'm sitting there zoning out, because I already know everything that we're going over for this class, because I actually paid attention beforehand and wasn't stupid, just started doodling on it, and I put little bingo ball antennas on it and put stripes on the tail and drew a bunch of bees around it going, "We love our king!" And the alligator's off to the side saying, "I am the Bumble King." And I'm like, this is stupid. What if it looked like if I, like, simplified the design? And here we are years later, and it's like, I need a brand. I need something iconic, something that's stupid enough that people will remember it no matter what.
Bingo.
What about an alligator with a bee theme? Yeah! Yeah! That'll work. And thus we have the Bumble King.
Yes. That's more detail than the FAQ on the website goes into.
Well,
I didn't
the FAQ is supposed to be kind of a quick overview, because I don't want to go into full you know, life bio on it. But
right. I like that. That's a that's a really good origin story. I wish I'd come up with a good brand like that.
Give KNGI. That actually sounds like something.
I guess. I don't have a real logo for it. It's just text.
Yeah, but yours actually looks like a professional logo. Mine's kind of like weird, but it's supposed to be so that you remember it. So
it's fitting. It's comic-y. It's kind of cartoonish. It's good. It's good for what you do.
It's also very simple because that's what I can draw. If it was anything more detailed, I wouldn't be able to do it reliably.
And the last question is a bonus question from
bonus round
from at
Fort.
Yes. From at Kyle JCRB. I don't know who that is.
Wait a minute. What are you pulling here?
Yeah, I don't know who that guy is. That guy's weird. I don't like him very much. What are some of your favorite Crush 40 jams?
Oh, What I'm Made Of has to be the top one.
That's a very good one, yes.
That never fails to get me pumped. Live and Learn, right up there with it.
See, I personally think Live and Learn, I love Live and Learn. It's a little overplayed. It's a little overrated for me, but that's just me.
A little bit, but
that's just me.
I think that might be because Open Your Heart was the first time that we ever got to experience the majesty of a Crush 40 boss theme.
Mm-hmm.
That set the standard.
Yes.
Live and Learn is not only a better song.
I would disagree, but that's okay.
Well, you're still wrong.
Okay.
But it's when you get somebody else going super and you're in what is definitely a better final boss fight in terms of scope and control and stakes and presentation. So I think that's what kind of puts it above all the others and why it gets so much play.
Mm-hmm.
Fight Myself.
That's a good song, actually. I like All Hail Shadow.
You know, pretty much anything Crush 40 has done related to a Sonic game, I'm all on. There's one song in particular, though, that they did for, I think it was a NASCAR game.
Mm-hmm.
It was on one of their earlier CDs.
It's on either their self-titled album or on when they were Sons of Angels, which was a short-lived thing. Revin' Up?
Revin' Up, maybe?
Track 2, Revin' Up?
I think so. Because that one, I'm pretty sure I can put on loop, speakers blaring, and never get tired of it.
Revin' Up is really good. I also like Dangerous Ground a lot.
I'd have to listen to it again. I don't know them all by title.
The Sons of Angels version, actually, the original version, has like a synth opening. Oh, it's good. It's good stuff. All the Way is kind of underrated in my eyes. It's a really good song. Let's see what else. Open Your Heart is probably the top for me. I don't know why. I just love that song so much more than any of the other ones. Their cover of Fire Woman, I like that one a lot.
I don't think I've heard that.
Really? Are you familiar with The Cult, the band The Cult?
Only in passing, only by name.
Okay, Fire Woman is a cover of The Cult's song.
Oh, I have to look that up.
You might have. I don't know. I'm surprised you haven't heard it.
But I may have. I'm really bad at, you know, song names and band titles. It's like, oh, hey, it's that song.
Yeah.
I didn't know you listened to them. Who?
Who? Yes. I actually like Crush 40's version of Free. I don't particularly care for the original version from Sonic Free Riders. It's not that great, but their cover is pretty great. I like it.
I think I agree with you on that one.
Yeah. And yeah, that's pretty much it, really. I like all their songs. Sonic Youth is silly. It's really silly, but it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, but it's a kind of silly that you can't help but smile.
Exactly,
to
exactly. When you realize, oh yeah, it's just the lyrics are just pretty much all titles of past Sonic songs. Okay, I'm on board.
It's a big celebration of, you know, them, and I like that.
Right, exactly. And of the fans. That seems like what it is. It's
Yeah.
It's sort of a fan anthem. I like that a lot. It was a good idea on their part. And that does it for this massive session of Q&A times on the Bumblecast.
Before we wrap it up, we're going to give a shout out to all the patrons that have made this show so possible for the last 25 years. Not so possible.
25 years? Holy crap! We've been at this for a long time!
I've been answering questions for an hour, Kyle. My brain is fried.
Keep that in. We're keeping this in, man. This isn't
going anywhere. Fine. Hear nice people, make show good. Thank much.
Thank you.
Daniel H, Zephyr Flame, Yams 88, Mike B, Fancy Fool, Connell T, Daniel L, Samuel P, Justin G, S. Yavarovich 9X, Alex P, and James K. Thank you all very much for supporting us for 25 episodes.
Yes, and 25 years, hopefully.
If you want to keep up with what I'm doing, head over to BumbleKing.com or follow me on Twitter at IanFlynnBKC.
And if you want to keep up with what I've been doing for the past 25 years, you can head on over to You can find me on Twitter at KyleJCRB, or you can find archived episodes of this show and many others over on the KNGI network at KNGI.org. And you can catch me streaming live video game music remixes and chiptune and a whole bunch of other awesome nerdy music on 8bitx.com every Saturday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Time.
That's going to wrap it up for this 25th episode of the Bumblecast. Thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you next time for Bumblecast episode 26.
Bye! Hey, thanks for listening to the Bumblecast. If you like the show, be sure to hit that subscribe button and consider supporting us on Patreon. We have some great rewards as well as big plans to make the show even better. Also, rate and review the show on iTunes. It gets more folks listening and really helps us out, so we definitely appreciate it. Original music by Ken Coda Snyder, used with permission. Find more of his music at bc.s3m.us and find the theme song at noisechanradio.bandcamp.com, available as a pay-what-you-want download.